The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
The man who knows the Holy Land like the back of his hand is Anthony Reich. Welcome to the show.
Benji Boker Tov, how are you guys doing? It sounds like the US presidential debate has captured your imagination almost as much as it's occupied the news stories in Israel. There's more about the US presidential debate than anything else. So I'm not going to talk about that. But just to mention that it really has grabbed the headlines here. But something else has grabbed the headlines that's just worth a mention before we get on to talking about some of the more meaty topics is the fact that the Knesset in the early hours of this morning voted to limit demonstrations against Prime Minister Netanyahu by a majority of 46 to 38. This is a very, very controversial agreement by the Knesset, a bill that's been passed by the Knesset, which effectively only allows people who live within 1 kilometer of the president, of the prime minister's residence to go along there to demonstrate outside his residence. Now we know that there have been these demonstrations going on for months already, mostly focused on Saturday evenings when people seem to come together the most, but also on other days of the week, there's been some sort of a permanent demonstration outside the prime ministerial residence against not only the way that the prime minister has been handling the COVID-19 situation, but also against his accusations against him of corruption. And now going forward, those demonstrations will be limited only to those people who live within 1 kilometer, which is exactly what the current lockdown restrictions allow people to move within 1 kilometer of their house. And this particular law will last for a week at a time. So the law will last for 1 week and then it will need to be extended each time, I guess for a further week. And we'll see what happens. The whole idea of limiting demonstrations is considered to be a huge restriction on democracy, and it's been very, very controversially received.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure it is a big deal. The one thing that people do in Israel is protest a lot if they feel like they need to. So
it is a big deal. I mean, the issue, of course, is that these demonstrations have had people coming together in quite large groups. There have been some attempts at social distancing within the demonstrations. We've actually seen some of the demonstrations divided up into different areas so that people can be socially distanced, that, you know, only a certain number of people will be within a specific area. So we have seen quite real attempts to try to social distance, even where these huge demonstrations take place. But the natural effect of so many people coming together in one place is inevitably that people will be exposed to each other. And so this is really the reason why the government claims it's passing the rules, is to try to implement the rules of social distancing and the rules of lockdown that apply to every other situation. As the Prime Minister said, he doesn't see why people should be allowed to come and demonstrate outside his house when they're not allowed to gather together on the beach or to go to sports fields or to go to parks. So for him, of course, we know that he has ulterior motives, but at least for him, this seemed to be very logical.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's talk actually about the situation with the corona. There's plans about a gradual easing. However, numbers are continuing to rise.
So, yeah, I mean, finally, I mean, I think that you guys seem to have at least got this one right where the easing of restrictions is concerned. I think one of the things that Israel did wrong when we first got things so right within the first wave is that the whole easing on the restrictions was just too dramatic and didn't allow for this gradual process, which, I know that you guys have had different stages of easing, and it seems at least to have slowed down any potential second wave. With us, the second wave was very, very dramatic indeed. And now the government has come up with the six-step exit strategy, what will happen afterwards. The problem, of course, is that having eased the restrictions already from the initial lockdown, to go back to a lockdown and expect that this lockdown, which is labeled as being more stringent than the original one, to expect that it is actually more stringent or even as stringent as the previous one is a little bit too much to expect, because people have gone into a different phase of understanding and experiencing this particular virus situation. And, you know, there's a lot of opposition to the lockdown. The government have put forward this six-step exit strategy. But in the meantime, we are still needing to deal with stage one, as they're calling it, which is really just to limit the number of people who are being infected. Lots and lots of war stories about things that happened over the period of the Chagim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, stories about 17 different planes having diagnosed coronavirus carriers on the plane traveling from Uman back to Israel after people were there for Rosh Hashanah. Stories about dancing on Yom Kippur after the end of the fast with people together in close proximity, no masks. Stories about big Sukkot that are currently under construction ahead of the Sukkot holiday that are supposedly designed to accommodate hundreds of people. This is not what stage one of a lockdown process should be. And we really somehow need to get our hands around how this can all be limited so that people will adhere to the situation. Because at the moment, we're heading towards, as the Prime Minister said, more than 1,000, perhaps even 1,500 people seriously ill in hospitals with the virus. Currently, fortunately, the numbers are less than that, less than 1,000. But the Prime Minister has predicted that that number could get to 1,500 within no time at all. And, you know, the current rate of infection seems to support that that's certainly possible. You know, thousands of people literally being diagnosed still with the virus every day. Unfortunately, people passing away. It's a situation which still is out of control as far as we can tell.
Now, there's been a little bit of a shift in the Middle East among leadership in the last while. There was the president or the emir of Oman that died, and there's some transitional governments going on in Sudan and all of these sorts of things. And another one has occurred now in Kuwait. The emir of Kuwait has passed away. Kuwait, interesting Arab country in that they have some kind of limited elections, so they have a bit of a parliament. And of course, famously was invaded by Iraq. So is an interesting player in the Middle East. What effect do you think that the death of this emir is going to have?
Well, the emir of Kuwait died yesterday at the age of 91. He'd been around for a while. He'd obviously been a ruler in charge of Kuwait already for some time. And you're right, we're seeing a generation passing now, moving on, and a new generation taking over. And my own feeling is that this new generation is able to see things in an entirely different way, that they seem not to be restricted by the types of feelings, views, sentiments that were held by the previous generations. They feel they are free to act in a different way. And I think that we see that certainly happening. And I think that some of the peace agreements that we've seen signed over the past few weeks and months bear testament to the fact that the newer generation is seeing things in a different way and seeing an opportunity to raise their children in a slightly different way from the way that they were raised by the older generation. And here we have Kuwait's Emir Sheikh Sabah Al Ahmad Al Sabah, who has passed away. Apparently, he was had been unwell for some time. He was under treatment in the United States. There has been no official notification about exactly what was the cause of his death. But the issue with Kuwait is that Kuwait has been a very, very strong supporter of the Palestinian cause. And with the death of the Emir of Kuwait, I think also dilutes further support that the Palestinian Authority and the general Palestinian cause has received, both in terms of financial funding, but also in terms of moral political, diplomatic support, both within the Arab League and within the wider international community. And I think that the death of the emir and the fact that his half-brother now, who's also quite advanced in age, also in his 80s, will take over as the new emir of Kuwait, doesn't necessarily represent a transition of generations, because obviously this is also a man who's quite well advanced in age and comes from the older generation. But it's just a slight shift. It's each time it's a little shift away from what the status quo was before. And I think that the Palestinians over the last 6 months to a year have really lost massive ground politically, diplomatically, and financially across every possible way. The loss of support from the United States and the clashes that they've had with the U.S. administration, the fact that the United Arab Emirates, and also the fact that the Abraham Accords were signed, has lost them some support. The fact that the Saudi regime seems inclined to go towards agreements with Israel. It's interesting that the Prime Minister, when he spoke yesterday at the United Nations, and perhaps we'll have a chance to talk a little bit about his address, but when he spoke at the United Nations, he spoke about the Palestinians preventing peace breaking out between Israel and the Arab world, that the Palestinians were really the roadblock towards this peace. And now that somehow that roadblock has been moved aside, we're seeing more and more inclination towards a peace agreement. And I think that with this passing of the emir, I think that we are moving more in that direction than was the case before. And who knows, Kuwait might be one of those countries on the list of countries wanting to sign a peace agreement with Israel. Who can tell?
Yeah, who indeed can tell in the Middle East these days. A couple of minutes before we hit 8 o'clock, Anthony, but let's talk about this address before the UN. It was done from Jerusalem because of the corona and people not going to New York. Also, before the address, there were a few WhatsApps going around, or we might see a big announcement. Were there any flames shown at the UN address this year?
Nothing really which has been different from previous addresses that the Prime Minister has given. I think this was a classic Netanyahu address to the United Nations, very much in the mold of what we've seen in previous years, complete with pictures and with massive revelations about Israeli intelligence and some of the things that we might know that he's revealed on the public stage for the first time. A lot of focus on Iran, no surprises there. And a little surprisingly for me, a lot of focus on Lebanon. Now, we know that Lebanon's been in the news for a number of different reasons. First of all, because they've had these massive explosions, which has really changed the face of Lebanese politics in general. We also spoke yesterday about this agreement over the maritime borders, which I think is a massive step forward for Israel's relationship with Lebanon. Now, of course, the Prime Minister is revealing how much the Israeli intelligence knows about other explosive storage facilities that are in place around Lebanon. Spoke quite at length about that explosion in downtown Beirut, what was there, who was responsible, what was going on, but also then went on to reveal another site, also in downtown Beirut, housing apparently explosives and being sited next to a gas supply depot with gas canisters right there. So this massive storage of explosive devices right next to this gas supply area, you know, lots of pictures and explanations about all that Israeli intelligence know about it. So this is the Prime Minister at his very, very, very best. This is the stage that he loves more than any other international stage. This is the place that he can really get to tell his story, not only about him, but about Israeli intelligence, revealing a lot more information than we would ever have been privy to see in previous generations. It's a very unusual situation that we find ourselves in these days, that the Prime Minister is prepared to stand up on an international stage and reveal so much about Israeli intelligence. Nothing really more than that, though. Lots of talk, lots of support of the Trump regime and how much the president has really understood the Middle East situation and how much support we've received from the U.S. Administration. But of course, Iran is really the main protagonist in all of this, and that's where the Prime Minister plays his best card. talking about Iran and the threat that Iran possesses, not only towards Israel, but of course to the world in general.
Thank you so much, Anthony. Lots of questions coming in, talking about Corona and talking about Netanyahu's speech. We're not going to get to any of those today because it is 8 o'clock, but we'll chat to you tomorrow. I'm sure there'll be more to talk about. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much indeed. Take care.